Hello, 1690 AM in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Cédric Gala. Concordia is proposing new measures to ease exam pressure due to pandemic-related stress. These new options include a pass notation for one course per term, meaning a student could choose a pass grade instead of their actual grade. Another change is that F grades are now automatically changed to a discontinued class. This system will be in place for fall 2020, but also for winter 2021. For more information, please consult concordia.ca. Also, Canadians are struggling with their mental health. That's according to a study from the Canadian Mental Health Association. Partnered with the University of British Columbia, the study found that the majority of Canadians are preoccupied by this pandemic, with over half fearing the death of a loved one. 10% of Canadians have had suicidal thoughts, compared to the 2.5% in 2016. Nursing science professor at UBC, Emily Jenkins, says they, quote, found a direct relationship between social stress factors and the decline of mental health. In other news, the United Kingdom is the first country to authorize the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. As early as next week, doses will be administered according to the UK's priority patient list, with a first batch of 800,000 doses from the 40 million ordered by the UK. For more stories, visit cjlo.com/news.
Stories of cuts and care.
This podcast is co-created by Shelani Baudin-Quintin,
Joël Dubé,
and Laura Magnuson. Scraped from the seabed, pulled up through water, into stark light. To know her, they cut her up.
A dominant facet of techno-scientific worlds, as positive as discourses surrounding science and technology, is the tendency to cut, to crack things open, as feminist researcher in environmental studies, Maria Puig de la Bella Casa, puts it, in order to gain access to the meaning enfolded in given entities. Cutting, dissecting, as extractive practices, ones that fail to engage on a relational level with the subjects and objects that they take from in the production of knowledge. As researchers and artists, we are troubled by such extractive practices. How might we attend to the cut differently, with care?
Through this podcast, we contemplate the concept of care alongside Maria Puig de la Bella Casa's book, Matters of Care, Speculative Ethics in More Than Human Worlds. By placing care at the center of ethical considerations, her approach allows us to raise epistemological questions, to think about new configurations of knowledge practices, and to contribute to speculative rearrangements. The objective is then to multiply knowledge, to build knowledge through the accretion of layers.
Our reflections are built around three stories of extraction. That of Hafrun, a clam pulled from her environment by a team of scientists for the data contained in her shell. Of a pregnant woman disembodied by the use of visualization technologies. And of Edith, having undergone a hysterectomy.
J'ai été opérée à 37 ans. Les autres, autrefois, les médecins, ils disaient pas à la madame d'être opérée, puis il fallait avoir des enfants pour avoir des enfants. Ah, oui, c'est ça. Fait que là, mon avis, c'était peut-être trop. Moi, ils voyaient bien que c'était bien trop pour moi. Fait qu'ils ont décidé de me donner la grande opération. Ça a été terminé en par là. J'ai tombé en forme après ça. Là, super le fun.
Total hysterectomy, or the great operation, as it was called when my grandmother, Edith, was 37 years old, is the removal of a frightening agent, the forever mysterious uterus. Afterwards, my grandmother felt relieved. But could things have been different? Could operating on my grandmother earlier have been a way to cut more gently?
Physicist and feminist philosopher Karen Barad encourages us to cut loose from agency's traditional human orbit. Because of its emphasis on individual human agency rather than on the relations that unite them. The cutting practices, such as the one performed on Edith, emerge from this logic, one that creates a divide between those who cut on one end of the spectrum and those who receive the cut on the other.
Have you heard of the clam who lived for half of a millennium? She died in 2006 after being dredged from the coast of North Iceland. Scraped from the seabed 262 feet beneath the surface, pulled up through water and into stark light. Hafrun, mystery of the ocean, the scientists named her. Arctica Islandica clams, which fit snugly in the palm of a hand, are of interest to scientists as recorders of past climates. Information pertaining to environmental conditions are preserved in the growth rings of their shells. Back at the laboratory, to harness the data embedded in her body, Dr. Paul Butler and his research team cut Hafrun up. First, they removed her soft tissue. Then, they unhinged her valves, encased them in clear blocks of resin, and sliced them into thin sections for observation under a microscope. Growth ring analysis, according to reports published by Butler, revealed that at the time of her death, Hafrun was 507 years old.
Visual technologies in science and medicine offer alternative ways of accessing interior hidden worlds. In some cases, in order to see through the opaque surface of a body, a medical touching seeing device is required. This is notably the case in the process of assisted reproduction, where ultrasound technology is used to penetrate a woman's body in order to display its contents on a screen. But this delocalized vision can be violent for the body, as Ingrid Dekmeister's research shows in an article on fetal images.
A majority of women, according to Dekmeister, have positive opinion of visualization techniques. But she believes that this is due to the social context and to uncritical views on technology and the medical system, rather than a genuine interest of women in visualization devices. This privileging and acceptance of narratives put forth by experts is reflected in Edith's story. Doctors didn't tell women to have surgery because they had to have children, she says, and later adds, "We relied on the doctors." This shows not only the social context influence on the patient's attitude, but the religious influence on the expert treatment.
On était jeunes, on suivait, on disait c'est normal, mais on suivait, on accrochait au médecin, qu'est-ce qu'il nous disait, ben on s'en allait avec ce qu'il nous disait. À part de ça, on ne demandait pas ça à l'une et à l'autre, non. Tant qu'on était jeune, à 30 ans, dans ce temps-là, écoute, on est 80, dans ce temps-là, qu'on avait des bébés.
An undisputed trust in the system.
In her research, Zeitmeister interrogates the doctor-patient relationship and in doing so opens up space for new perspectives. Although it is about prenatal care, she writes,
"The focus has shifted from caring to technical surveillance. Hence, women become the object of medical surveillance."
Under these conditions, the visualization of the fetus on the screen works to shift medical attention away from the woman toward this new subject. The fetus becomes regarded as a patient, and even more so, as the primary patient. One only has to look at a typical description of a follow-up appointment to understand how this shift occurs. The doctor is positioned between the patient lying on her back and the screen, and faces the images of the fetus and not the mother-to-be. On the screen, the fetus seems to float in an indeterminate space, without boundaries. Her pregnant body has disappeared, and as Eckmeister so eloquently puts it,
has become a kind of empty spaceship.
This detached view creates a disembodiment of the fetus, but also of the woman in her non-representation on screen. A disembodiment as the consequence of a distant vision.
Ils ont coupé, moi, là, à un moment donné, parce que c'était, le vagin était trop étroit. Puis ma mère m'avait expliqué, elle, c'était pareil, elle aussi. Ah. Elle a eu 10 enfants, puis ça a toujours été difficile, ce côté-là. Le vagin, c'était trop petit. Mais moi, à un moment donné, ils ont fait des incisions, là, clairement.
Ah oui?
Ouais, fait couper. Mais quand, à mes accouchements, d'ailleurs, ils coupaient pareil, parce que le bébé n'aurait jamais passé, tout. Ça déchirait, mais ils coupaient. Autrement dit, j'étais comme endormi.
Ouais.
J'étais pas endormi, c'était comme tout engourdi, dans tout le bas du corps, tout engourdi. Puis finalement, bien, ça m'a toujours aidé, ça. Là. Fait que quand j'avais des relations après, c'était moins pire aussi.
The vagina was too narrow, so they cut it. When she was giving birth, they were also cutting. It always helped her, though. When she had relations afterwards, it was somewhat better. At very least, less worse. Departing from a cut that extracts and rips apart, or one that creates dichotomies and separates, Karen Barraz suggests we think of the cut differently through cutting together apart. Even if this concept arises in the midst of considerations around material entanglements with and in the world, it remains pertinent when dealing with the violence and trauma of the cut performed without care, be it physical, emotional, conceptual, or semantic. Cutting together apart is to be understood from the standpoint of Barad's other major concept, that of intra-action. She defines intra-action as
the mutual constitution of entangled agencies.
Rather than a multitude of individual agencies that then relate to one another, relationality precedes agency. Bearing that in mind, cutting together apart comes in as a counter-incision, and as a way to surpass the dichotomy often created by the cut. Instead, it is about bringing together opposites. It is an agential cut where
differences percolate through everything.
As Barad writes,
each being retreaded through the other.
Cutting together apart as a reassembling procedure. Frick de la Bella Casa recognizes the potentialities opened up by Barad's cutting together apart when she writes,
an account of a thing produced with and for care can indeed create divergence and conflict by criticizing the way an issue is assembled. It can produce visions that cut differently the shape of a thing, questioning the extension of a network. It can even advocate for cutting off components in a matter of concern.
As it appears, it isn't so much a matter of if cutting needs to occur, although sometimes it is, as it is about how the cut can be performed in a more caring way through recutting, reassembling, and re-embodying. In a similar vein, Zeigmeister provides a new angle for observing and understanding the role of ultrasound technologies used in prenatal care, allowing for a critical cut, that is, by exposing a conflict in the body-technology relationship. A caring approach can then emerge. In the words of Puig de la Bella Casa, still building on Barad's theory,
drawing attention to laboratory touching devices can also highlight the materiality and corporeality of subject-object interactions in scientific practices, missed out by epistemologies founded on representation that tend to separate the agencies of subjects and objects.
This approach allows for the body of the expectant mother, rendered invisible, to be brought back into the picture, to be re-embodied, its materiality as much as its affective dimensions.
What do we know of Hafrin the Clam, this near-mythic creature archived as WG061294R? I am looking at what is perhaps the only photograph of her valves before they were cut into sections. Two disarticulated shell halves rest side by side atop blue velvet. Beneath them, a specimen label, about as detailed as a headstone, falls out of the frame, offering a thin, partial contour of the circumstances surrounding her death. Part of a latitudinal coordinate, missing degree 31 minutes 59 seconds north. The weight of a valve, 52.08 grams. Some fields are left blank. This data, though incomplete, tells one story, but data alone, if at all, surely cannot harness her essence. I wonder about the ineffable dimensions of her sprawling life. How might we have come to know Hathrun differently, relationally, with her, rather than from her? In August 2017, I ventured to North Iceland to see what I could come to know of Hathrun by immersing myself in the frigid depths of her watery world. I descended to the ocean bottom, in close proximity to where Hathrun had likely remained burrowed since the early 1500s, as I learned through email correspondence with Dr. Paul Butler. Here, in 2 degrees Celsius waters, about the temperature of a morgue, I hovered inches above centuries-old Arctica Islandica bivalves, alive, burrowed into the seabed, with only shell rims and siphons exposed. Ever so slightly, ever so briefly, I brushed up against the surface of their world.
We sympathize with Ron Broglio's argument in Surface Encounters, Thinking with Animals and Art, that to gain a degree of understanding of the felt experience of another animal does not necessitate that we cut into, enter its umwelt, its unique and richly detailed perceptual world, an impossibility to be sure. Rather, something of what it means to be that animal, to be more than human, might be gleaned through coming into contact with the surface of its world. According to Broglio,
surfaces are sites where the human and animal worlds bump up against each other. Jarring and jamming are anticipated cultural codes for animals and offering us something different.
Broglio's inquiry is of interest to us here because of its underlying call to not only consider, but to value the perspectives of animals, others, those involved in our research.
In these questions of the animals' worlds,
he writes,
we are confronted with how to understand others' perspectives without reducing them to our own and without throwing out parts of these others' worlds that we cannot understand.
We see this as a call to collapse the distance between researcher and participant through relational encounters and exchange, intra-action.
The act of cutting on its own is insufficient. Puig de la Bella Casa and Barad advocate for effective and relational involvement in the ways cuts are performed. Puig de la Bella Casa writes,
worlds seen through care accentuate a sense of interdependency and involvement.
Care supports the intra-action that is demanded from cutting together apart.
Lying on the table, legs open, I escape as best as I can into the realm of these images, while with the probe in hand, a doctor listens to the inside of my body. I wonder what her world would look like if her bodies were not opaque. The doctor searches my body and observes her scream. She is the one who can translate the sound that passes through me, which has become touch, echo, and then image, into knowledge that is intelligible to her patient, me. When she finally opens her mouth to emit a vibration that will become the words that can translate one of my internal truths, I cling to the little blanket that covers me, feeling the wet and salty sweat forming on my skin. She shows me a little bead that I knew was attached to my uterus and tells me the heart is not beating.
Care can open the door to speculative approaches that demand responsibility, or response-ability, as Broad uses the term, enabling the possibility for the subject to respond to question the questions that are being posed. Storytelling, when approached with care, meaning making space, listening, letting the subject speak for herself, is perhaps one way to recognize others' experiences as sources of knowledge. The felt embodied experiences of patients, research participants, and the more than human can easily be overlooked if care is not centralized in methodology. Puig de la Bella Casa writes,
attention to concerns brings us closer to putting forward the need of a practice of care as something we can do as thinkers and knowledge creators, fostering also more awareness about what we care for and about how this contributes to mattering the world.
From considering the violence surrounding Hathorne's death and speculating about how we might come to know something of her life, to bearing witness to Edith's account of her hysterectomy and a woman's experience of medicalization and loss, we have come to see care as a means to recognize and value the subjective experience within research and creation practices, and to open up space for vulnerability, affect, and responsibility.
With gratitude, we thank our colleagues in Yuma 888 and Dr. Carolina Camry.
Thank you to CJLO and Francella Fialos for supporting this podcast.
Finally, many thanks to Danielle Garrison for her support in the formation of this podcast, and Edith for sharing her experience with us.
Social distancing is critical during the pandemic. However, your mental health is just as important. If you are feeling helpless, lonely, or depressed due to isolation or physical distancing, you can text WELLNESS to 741-741 for confidential chat sessions with a mental health professional. Tips to take care of yourself include staying connected with loved ones virtually on a regular basis and taking frequent breaks from social media and the news. Be kind to yourself and know that you are loved. Sevabinani. This message is brought to you by...
Hi, and welcome to the show tonight. Tonight we have...
the best new music.
But right now, let's check out the changes in this week's...
CJLO.
Top 30.
Charts and crafts. Counting down the best new artists played at the station. Every Friday at noon, only on CJLO 1690 AM.
Yeah, 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 this is CJLO. Won't you stay tuned for some more good music?
Seeing my skin brown with a very delimited line playing in this in front of the mirror.
I am reminded of a picture of me when I was a kid, maybe like 5 or 6 years old. And I'm this like tiny thing in like this very big red snowsuit, and I look like I kind of disappear in the snowsuit. It's in front of my parents' house, and I'm holding in my hand a string, from the sleigh, plastic sleigh that's right behind me, and. My parents always joked about this picture of me because I looked like a real-life Maggie Simpson. Tiny in my big red snowsuit.
The idea of walking with is a crucial tool for collective recognition and a performative act of enunciation, an act of speech that we can exercise in space. As a filmmaker, the virtual space could be an extension of the public space, an intersection that I'm trying to find through these soundscapes. However, how can we do it from the interior of our houses, keeping us safe from being infected by this virus, keeping us away from the collective?
This dyad where my body and your breath syncopate, and we have the same eyes, and I learn so much from you, ancestor little one, and so I miss my friends, and I'm also with them, like you and I are alone and together, breath by breath.
I feel the same way with just
this exact moment,
trying to find something that is falls under the blanket of self-care. It's really important right now. So
where I live
for many
and
people, there's a great stress. Yes, because I'm always struggling with how everything around me is like super pissed off, super anxious, and everything. But I'm still in a very cozy place most of the time. So there's not. I have like job security until March, and then afterwards I'm trying to go to Canada. So things like I don't know how we call it, but workers being laid off or having less hours is huge in Germany right now, and the repercussions of this will be felt in the next 5 years. So there's this thing going on, and otherwise, like I've mentioned always a bunch of times, it's just the whole protest against the regulations, the numbers going up and everything. But most of the time, working for the university right now is just going to work, going home.
Cool. And then I just want to say, sorry, because it inspired me what you're saying about, I mean, maybe it's obvious, but all the job loss and economic complaint being like the hotbed or the excuse for this sort of explosive manifestation of white supremacy. And it's like we're somehow justified because whiteness is being displaced in these crises. So I'm just connecting it to some of the outtakes that you've been sharing of the protests in Germany, and I think I mentioned there's a lot of anti-mask protests in Quebec as well, which are all about, like, we're getting the short end of this crisis.
Yes.
Now in France, it's less the right-wing protests, but it's like the government has just been, like, taking advantage of the situation to pass all these, like, super right-wing laws, like the thing that I wrote about separatism.
Preparing myself to the next stage, which is going out.
Now, for me, it turns very much into, like, you know, other very personal ways of, like, yes, feeling very lost and feeling dispersed, you know, just because what I've been used to do in the past, I'm not doing it anymore, so I have to find this other way of reorganizing yourself, basically, you know? And that, like, I've been thinking about this also, like, in a pure perspective of, like, it's also not being in touch with your community, you know, and, like, and not being in touch with your community is, like, is more invisibility, and it's kind of, like, a lot of this is something that we share with a lot of people in the community. I feel it's, like, less the right wing, yes, I feel very much like the community has been, like, taking advantage of the situation to pass all these, like, super right-wing laws, like the thing that I wrote about on separatism. And now they just passed a law where you can't film police anymore. But yeah, so that makes, like, the situation kind of, like, also anxious, because of course I think for everyone is just seeing this situation where, like, things are just not seeming to get better. And just what's going on in the future. And for me, it translates very much into, like, you know, other very personal ways of, like, just being lost and feeling dispersed, you know, just because Something in Amanda's section that I come back to is, like, contradictions around confinement and assembly. And I were proposing that, in a way, this project is our attempt at assembly together. So we're both connecting, but we are, like, gathering in a way. And there's something politically manifesting in that sort of form, albeit through sound and sounding.
Each eye brings the weak, along as he or she enters or exits that door, finding himself in an unprotected enclosure or exposed out there on the street. We might say that there is a group, if not a line, walking there too, whether or not there is anywhere to be seen. It is a
Wird von 6 Polizisten aus dem Bereich der Bühne geleitet.
Breathing, dying, no other way. For this exercise, you will hear the different echoes in my home. This is my studio. This is a chord, and these are my steps going to the living room and the window. Stop. In order to hear this part, you have to approach a window. Get closer. Okay? Are you there? Okay.
Now, with your hand, touch the surface of the window. Feel the vibration from outside. Feel and hear the different sounds mixed. You might also feel the cold from the glass. Embrace it. That's your connection with the outside. Now, imagine what it is to walk outside and collect with they, with them, with us, with everyone, as one. We can scream. We can march. We can step into the silence. We can find ourselves as well. Now, put your hand down and close it really strong. Close your hand.
You receive a message. Hop off the couch where you've been hunched, reading since the sun came up popsicle pink over the construction site across the street. It's the day before the American election, and your roommate is listening to commentators sharing their predictions. You open the door carefully. It could be pushed right up against the threshold. Look left, then right. Wait, here it is, an envelope, hooked in the steel curly cues beneath your mailbox. It's regular size, but a special color, pale yellow with cursive letters written with a felt-tip pen. You take the envelope to your bedroom. Inside, there is a thin sheet of paper folded into a second envelope, sealed with tape. The commentator's voice is coming through the wall, but most words aren't discernible. Maybe you hear mail-in ballots. You think of people gathering in the streets. You peel the tape like a Band-Aid. Inside is a stack of flashcards with a title and a dedication printed on top. Oh, so, this poem isn't for you. It's for Marty. Maybe the whole thing is for Marty. The romance of the secret delivery, the folded paper, the small square of tape. You're kind of a conduit for this thing with Marty. It's okay, at least you know. You flip the title card. Read the poem once, then shuffle the stack back together, careful not to mess up the order. Wrap it again in the sheet of paper, grateful for the creases. Drag a nail back and forth over the unstuck tape. Try to let it wash over you. But first, there's a word to Google, susurrate. The perfect word for the poem, it turns out. Like a whisper, but especially for trees. You have to unstick the tape, unfold the paper, read it all again now that you know. It will take another reading for you to hear it speak back to you, for the meaning to start unfurling inside you.
Friendships with writers offers the potential of finding yourself in their arrangements. It's happened to me a few times. I found myself eternally sharing other universes with made-up people. Even if it isn't you, like a horoscope, you can extract what you need to keep you going. I've been having trouble with eye floaters lately. I think it might be all of the screen time. Last week, I couldn't stop seeing the outline of America. I did it to myself. I just couldn't stop watching. And when it was called, I relinquished my better judgment and uncritically basked in centrist joy. I know it's not great. In fact, it's probably worse, but for one day I gave into it and it felt really fucking good. But it's not sustainable. We need breaks. These punctures are futile. Diving headfirst into the Higgs field, a field of energy that wraps around the universe and gives all matter weight. Our universe sits comfortably in this cradle, but what was discovered a few years ago is that the Higgs field is in an unstable state. Just like an ice cube is unstable and its stable state is a pool of water, the Higgs field has a preferred state that exists just on the other side of our universe. It would take an unlikely cataclysmic event to push us onto the other side, where we couldn't be supported and we would cease to exist. There is a possibility, though, that through a phenomenon called quantum tunneling, a pinhole-sized bubble from the preferred Higgs states would burrow its way through the barrier that separates us and enter our universe. It would create a powerful vacuum. As it traveled through our universe, everything in its path would be destroyed. This scenario isn't likely to happen for another 10 to 100 years. That's a 1 followed by 100 zeros. But it might have already happened, and it just hasn't reached us yet. Because the vacuum would travel at the speed of light, we wouldn't see it coming, nor would we be conscious of the end. Everything would be gone, this and parallel universes. That feels better.
The interpretative question is suspended upon exiting by the sound of dry leaves scattering across Avenue Kerb, at first confused with the sound of rain. The interpreter extends her hand. Then the sound of the spinning prayer wheel. She checks to see if the video is still playing on her phone. I interpret the confusion as a setback. A line of Mary Ruffel's read that morning over coffee comes to mind. How near we were to having thoughts. And another, explain yourself or vanish. Ute Hull in a book on cinema writes, the cinematic apparatus produces a special kind of trance in which we are distracted, at least for the duration of a screening, from our own routines, and in which all we can do is submissively follow our consciousness, or we have to leave the space of the cinema. But this goes far beyond what constantly appears in Godard as entrance, in trance. When you exit, you also enter. On the drizzly walk from Park X to the Mile End, I download an app called Universe Splitter. The app claims to activate a quantum device in Geneva, which sends individual photons towards a partially silvered mirror, so that each photon will have two possible paths. Scientists say the photon will take both paths, but in separate universes. To activate the quantum device, you input two different things you'd like to be doing, one in a take a chance category, the other in play it safe. You press a button, and within seconds, the app will report to you which of the two universes you're in. There's an asterisk after this last bit. I scroll down to the caveat, which simply reads, if modern physics is correct. Then a troubling, not responsible for users. What, I wonder? The sentence fails to end. I input two things that struck me in Amon's response to Eva's response to the poem I had slipped under her mailbox last week. The app makes noises when you press the button, like the car in Back to the Future gearing up for time travel. It shudders and flashes. It's corny, I know. You open your eyes, and there you both are.
The many temporalities of an argument. I'm in the midst of several open ones with my mom. Her impositions have never been followed by reflection and articulation. She means well, and I'm sure this is why I struggle to write functioning essays. I've had to speculate on why things are what they are, but that's my generation's privilege. I was born on the first day of Operation Blue Star. Born into nervous speculation about the fate of family. Although this kind of speculation has never been spoken about, perhaps it has to do with another unarticulated imposition, the constant worry that I'm in grave danger from harm or illness. Mum has yet to explain that the spirit, who took several generations in a few weeks and visited her and her sister on the same night decades later, might always be around the corner. I can only speculate. I'm not saying that the spirit is the state, but this is how myth is born. And when left unarticulated, this is how ideology comes to bear. I'm seeing my generation taking up unarticulated pain to articulate calcified positions, and it scares me. I'm trying to write an essay about it right now. Not sure how long it will take, but I'll let you know.
In Heather Davis's A Short History of Plastic, she says, plastic can be considered the substrata of late capitalism, but its role in our life, unlike the more abstract relationship that we have with other oil products, is intimate. Sometimes when I catch my reflection unexpectedly, there's an intensity in my face that freaks me out. My mom's fervency shining out of my face, scary and a little funny at the same time. In October, I called an old friend and told him I want him to jerk off into the head of a turkey baster for me. God bless him, he said, when? Last night in the supermarket line, all masked up and socially distanced, I noticed a stack of turkey basters, each in their own individual plastic sheath, with a yellow sale tag underneath, $1.75. It's probably an occasion that calls for its own turkey baster. Then I remember what I've been reading about how late capitalism has suffocated the planet under turkey baster baggies and other bits of shippable, stackable, pseudo-disposable plastic. We are speeding at a breakneck velocity towards the end of humanity. Of all the possible endings, the best we can do is try to die off gracefully. But Davis demos Haraway to sing, say, in my head under the supermarket lights, that doesn't mean you're allowed to just give in to nihilism. A woman in a plastic face shield who's had her hazard pay revoke scans my groceries. The human race isn't responsible. We aren't all in it together. It's thanks to particular humans, rich white humans, and at this very moment, particular people are suffering. Davis says plastic's longevity and ability to preserve represents an untenable reprieve from the cyclical nature of life and death. We can't remove ourselves from the fecundity of life and death, Davis says. But in the same breath, she warns, along with Demos and Haraway and Tissing, against giving in to the fantasy of a finite end.
Opening a speech he wrote for his friend upon his friend's death at the cemetery where his friend was buried, Jacques Derrida spoke in an uncharacteristically straightforward way. He said, by meditating upon what Emmanuel Levinas wrote about the French word adieu, which I will recall in a few moments, I hope to find a sort of encouragement to speak here. And I would like to do so with unadorned, naked words, words as childlike and disarmed as my sorrow. His words form a curious little tent I want to crawl inside. To move beyond inoculation, what Sandoval through Bart calls the affirmative action approach, and flood our veins with the disease, we need words that are disarmed and disarming. Words that, as Claudia Rankine states, let us stay in the same car together. Disease, in Bart's formulation, is not negative, but rather the invasion, the reception needed to form a radical break with the status quo and launch ourselves into new existential territories. There's a line in Rankine's book, Citizen, which states, every day your mouth opens and receives the kiss the world offers, which seals you shut. I want to know how to get to the other possible worlds. A half-silvered mirror is also known as a beam splitter. If you manipulate the light, it becomes a one-way mirror. You can see in, but you can't see out. Without that particular configuration of light, however, the light of the interrogation cell, they partially absorb and partially reflect, like a friend or friendship. They split the universe like that.
Our podcast was recorded while quantum tunneling in the parking garage of the Atlas building in Montreal on a cold December morning in 2020. The script of our podcast was made through an experiment sort of like the game of telephone. One of our group members would send an art object to another member, then that member responded, sent the response to the third member, who responded to their response without encountering the original object. The third response was sent back to the original member, and they would then write a final response, not knowing what had happened in between sending out their object and receiving the last response. We did three rounds of this, taking
turns. Climb into my musical attic every Thursday to discover the many hidden gems of Canada and the world. I am your host, Jean Philippe, and each week I will explore French music, Indigenous music, and many other artists I have treasured. Tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. for an exclusive listen of my hidden jams and hidden gems. Only on CJLO 1698. Are you looking for reliable, accurate updates on COVID-19 but don't know where to start? Statistics Canada is conducting crowdsourcing data collections you can trust and even contribute to yourself. You can find data tables and more at statcan.gc.ca. And the Association for Canadian Studies has created the COVID-19 Social Impact Network to address the social and economic dimensions of the pandemic. They put together weekly tracking survey results that you can consult. Visit their website at acs-aec.ca. This message is brought to you.
Y'all, this is CJLO. Want you stay tuned for some more good music. Aight.
Buča va medaja, so se voj rovela. Kasa dava svako dive, arma ja voj dela. Muči melpa sorat nas ovela gledam da te dudureste a mena čađa a men cikne te bar joba tu te načada. Darkele tu kale, bova čarom manže, našti tu te ave, kaj sma budu.
nazvalo. A me bi bahtalo. Gelem da dre, du du reste, a me na ča ča.
Chill.